Good evening. Sorry to interrupt those conversations. You can continue afterwards. So, good evening and welcome to Estates Gazette's first Question Time event of 2017. My name's Damien Wild and I'm the editor of Estates Gazette. So congratulations, we've beaten the weather. We're all here. So that's the main thing. We're in for a fantastic hour, I'm sure, of debate and discussion. I know I can count on all of you to contribute to that. But I suppose at this point of the year, we should be wondering whether 2017 will be as interesting as 2016. I guess the answer to that is, let's hope not. But we'll see. But it almost certainly won't be an easy ride. There'll be challenges along the way and opportunities too, I'm sure. Brexit and all its consequences will take some time to play out. And when we can't even predict what Donald Trump will say next, I'm not even sure that he can, to be honest, but it's impossible to know what his presidency will mean for global investment flows into property and other competing assets. But that said, some things are predictable, I think. Residential and PRS particularly will top many policymakers' and investors' priority lists this year. 2017 will see tech's influence on property grow, no doubt. And occupier demand, as ever, will be key to the industry success in this city and beyond. So here in Glasgow, for instance, could the government property unit's mega requirement be a catalyst for the market? And what will the city deal mean in practice? I know that's on your list of questions. And what else can local and national government do to ensure that the Glasgow economy gets the kickstart it needs at the beginning of a somewhat unpredictable year? So we have a very varied and highly expert panel to deal with these and other questions that you might have. I'm sure each of you is familiar with the question time format. Raise your hand and I'll come to you, and a microphone will find you as well, and you can put your questions to the panel. Many of you have pre-submitted questions, and I'll be putting some of those to the panel and asking you, if you're in the audience, to put them to the panel as well. But we're also using another device, so if you have your phones to hand, and who doesn't, use slido.com. The details will pop up on the screen there, and you could put questions in there using the hashtag EGQTGlasgow. And you can also like questions to the top there, so it's highly interactive and will add to the enjoyment this evening, no doubt. Also, if you're tweeting, use the same hashtag EGQTGlasgow. Right, to our panel, about half a mile over there from me is Bruce Patrick, head of Savills Glasgow office. Next to him is Stephen Lewis, managing director of HFD Property Group. Then we have Claire Kemsley, director of Hoskins Architects. In the centre, almost in the centre there, not quite, it's an even number, is Richard Brown, executive director of Development and Regeneration Services at Glasgow City Council. Next to him is Paul Curran, who is chairman of the Scottish Property Federation and managing director of Quarter Mile. And nearest to me is Leah Hutchin, founder of Appointed, an award-winning company revolutionising the way that businesses schedule appointments. So that's our panel. Let's get straight down to the first question. And is Andrew Lightbody here? Andrew, just at the back, the microphone is just coming your way now.
Good evening. The question I wanted to ask was, which projects to receive City Deal funding will have the greatest impact on the Greater Glasgow property market?
Okay, thank you. So Richard led the office of negotiations with governments on the City Deal, so I won't come to you first. I'll come to Bruce, because I really want to hear from the panel where you want it to go, and then we'll hear from Richard on where it's going.
So I think from an investment development point of view, our thoughts are that there are parts of the city and the conurbation that need money spent on infrastructure more than others. I think that we like the idea of perhaps some of the peripheral parts of the city core, whether it be the Argyll streets and the Sauchie Hall streets, that are perhaps some of the key sort of gateway entrances into the city, having improvements to the streetscape and the infrastructure. I think our hope is that the money spent in these areas is clearly seen by the public, and I think it's all about engaging with the local owners of buildings and land that lie adjacent to these areas where the money has been spent, that they have to be brought in to improve their properties at the same time. I think the idea of the tram link out to Glasgow Airport is a great idea, giving people more choice, public transport. And I think my greatest wish from that is that that has some sort of positive impact on Paisley town centre, because that really needs a helping hand.
Okay, and you said it's important that it's seen. So visibility and, benefits are important.
It's obviously it's infrastructure orientated, and sometimes infrastructure, you know, lots of money can be spent on it, but what can people see as a result? So I think we want to see what is it and see the change around it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And Stephen, from your point of view.
Yeah, not a huge amount more to add to that. The airport link's clearly important. Again, vacant derelict land. I think for me, these are long-term projects. 1.3 billion over 25 years is a long gestation period. It's what can be done, not just seen, but seen maybe early on. I think the rail link could be one of those early projects, and some other stuff that could get some early wins. I think that's always a challenge in a big infrastructure fund like the City Deal.
Okay, thank you. And Claire, a lot of your work is with social housing, healthcare, schools and arts and museum projects. Do those priorities match the priorities that you see necessary in the city?
Yes, I mean, I think I would echo what was said there by Bruce, that it's what is seen is important. I mean, I think if you can compare the quality of Buchanan Street and the streetscape there with what's on Argyle Street at the moment, there's a huge difference. And I think that is more important than people realise. So I would echo that it's what's seen as is important.
Okay, and are there other areas beyond infrastructure?
Another infrastructure one, though, that I think is important as well is, and I know there's money going to be spent on it, is the facilities for cyclists. I think Glasgow is way behind cities like Bristol and London in safe cycle routes, and I know that there are some planned, especially in the west side of the city, and I think that will be really welcomed.
Okay, thank you. Paul?
I think the airport link's obviously the key. You're looking at international investment into the city. Why is there no inward investment into the city from international funds for new office development? You've got to really do these major projects to really show what's being invested in and the benefits of sort of coming to Glasgow and investing in that sort of way. So it's just, I think, something very visible. I maybe disagree slightly about cycleways and things like that. What are they really adding to economic development? I think you really just have to focus on the big major infrastructure development that improves connectivity.
Okay, and is it, you're based in Edinburgh, is this something that Edinburgh's looking on with envy?
I think they're looking at the price tag with envy, given the cost of the trams. But I mean, Glasgow and Edinburgh Airport are growing airports, but you look at them in comparison to Manchester, which is always the comparison that we use for our two major cities. And I mean, the connectivity of Manchester Airport, Birmingham Airport into the city centre and beyond is night and day between what we've got in both of our major airports. So for me, that's a major starter for 10.
Okay, thank you. And Leah, as a growing business within the city, are those your priorities that you've heard so far?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with Paul on kind of the importance of anything that's getting us outward facing and connecting with a global market. I think that's super important for Glasgow's growth. Definitely disagree on the cyclists, though. I just think it's a lovely opportunity to get Glasgow moving more easily. There's a lot of hills for cyclists, so I feel it's maybe a bit conflicting there. But I think just the health impacts of making Glasgow a safer city to be mobile around could be really important.
Okay, thank you. And Richard, what is it going to deliver and how quickly?
Well, the Glasgow City Deal was designed to deal with infrastructure problems and to do the things that most developers don't want to do or can't afford to do. There will be visibility, and anyone who hasn't seen the consultation or been involved in the consultation around, for instance, the Avenues project in the city centre, primarily Suckey Hall, which is the furthest advanced, should look at that. There has been extensive consultation, and from where we started in that process to where we ended up and what is now coming out of the design stage, it has been driven by that very engagement with the business community and with residents and with the third sector and with the academic sector. And they've all been engaged in that process, and the detailed planning for that will be coming through fairly shortly. In terms of one of the other projects, the Metropolitan Glasgow Strategic Drainage Partnership, there's a shortcut of words for you. It's really designed to deal with issues that surround drainage in many parts of the city. So whilst we would like to build more affordable and various house types across the city, it's often been stymied by the inability to connect into the, you know, the Victorian sewerage and drainage system. So we want to tackle that by spending money to unlock sites across the city. So there's all sorts of investment. It's a very it's very wide ranging, and again, Site Hill is progressing really well. It's one of the first projects to hit the ground, and that will unlock a development right on the edge of the city centre, and arguably one of the best sites on edge of centre about 20 years before it would have happened had we had to go through a non-city deal approach. So it is about fast forwarding investment. It is about tackling infrastructure. Some of it will be underground, some of it will be on the ground. We have about £115 million to spend, for instance, in public realm throughout the city centre to tackle that very thing about why does Buchanan Street look great and Argyle Street look less great. So these are the things that we're certainly trying to tackle, and we will engage with the business community, with the investment community, and that's driving where some of these priorities are being spent. But it is, you know, we make no bones, but it is about addressing things like sewerage, drainage, you know, remediation, pipes, key walls. That's what it's there for, to try and unlock development. And that continued working with the development community is important so that we can realise the benefits.
And is it clear yet how much private sector investment this £1 billion-plus pounds will generate?
Well, the target, there's certainly targets in the original deal, and certainly in terms of the deals that are progressing at this stage. So if I look at Site Hill, we're out to a tender exercise in attracting private sector investment for housing in that part of the city. And the response has been very strong. I can't obviously say any more than that because it's a tender process, but yes, there is private sector investment. And in terms of Sucky Hall District, we're looking at additional private sector investment around there. So these things are evolving, and we'll continue to see what we can do to unlock those opportunities. There are certainly targets around that, and we want to try and unlock as much private sector investment to, you know, co-produce really good developments for the city.
And Paul, do you think SPF members will warmly embrace the opportunities?
I think, I mean, the membership's also looking for opportunities, but it's got to be, I mean, infrastructure investment has got to be in the right locations, right places, that requires real sort of consultation with the private sector. And I think that is probably questionable on city deals. I don't know, Richard, you might disagree, but I mean, certainly in terms of the process that Glasgow went through, it seemed to go through very quickly. It's been sitting there for a couple of years. Edinburgh's going through a similar city deal process that seems to have been taking a couple of years, but we still don't really seem to have anything published yet. But again, the promise was consultation and involvement of the private sector in that to make sure that the investment was in locations that the viability of projects would be improved. So that's my major concern.
Do you think often it's too late by the time?
I think it's too late, and it's the pet projects that come off the shelf that have maybe been on the shelf for 10, 15, 20 years, who knows? So I think it really is sort of key that the private sector are involved in pulling these deals together as well.
Richard, was that the case?
Well, I mean, the Glasgow City deal was the first of its kind in Scotland. It didn't exist, you know, so when we approached Westminster Government and said we'd like a city deal, you know, the second word was off, basically. I'll let you imagine what the first word was. But, you know, so we were in a time of trying to secure something and powers and investment that didn't actually exist. So, you know, in building that case, I wouldn't say that we had time to engage with the wider business community, but we tried to select projects that we modelled in such a way that they were designed to attract, you know, private sector investment. And did we get it right? Well, I suppose time will tell, and I'm sure there's parts of it that we could have done better had we had more time. But actually, all of the projects that we've taken forward have been through some form of consultation. So, you know, they're not projects that we dreamed up just to make a bid to Westminster and something to Holyrood. They were projects, you might call them pet projects or on the shelf, but they were projects that had been through maybe iterations of City Plan 2 or had been through regeneration frameworks or had been things that the business community were saying to us. You know, specifically if I look at the city centre, for instance, you know, a lot of the investment community and developer community have been saying, can we tackle the issues about, you know, poor public realm out with Buchanan Street? Can we invest in capacity issues with water and power? So part of that, you know, a significant part of the City Deal investment in the city is absolutely aimed at that. And again, with the airport access project that's been taken forward between Glasgow and Renfrewshire councils, that is in response to people saying, well, if I bring a client in and they have to come in by road into the city centre, it takes forever. So, you know, I would say that there has been significant consultation, not always just with the business community, but it's also with our citizens. You know, so Sight Hill, for instance, was one of our 8 priority regeneration projects in the city, and that's meeting aspirations of communities as well as the business community, and that's what City Deal was there to unlock. So could we have done better? Probably, absolutely. You know, and, you know, can we learn from that? Absolutely. And is the door open for City Deal 2? Hopefully.
Okay. And cycling? What's the council's position on more cycling provision?
As you can see, I cycle often. I think it's important that we have all modes of transport in the city. And, you know, in terms of the design that's coming forward, for instance, in the Suckey Hall Avenue, the intention is to have separate cycling lanes but to allow traffic flow. But I think a city that is open to, you know, all forms of transport is good. And I think public transport is something we need to continue to improve on. But, you know, we're seeing more people who wish to cycle into their offices and whatever. And I think if we can accommodate that and still keep the city moving, then we should welcome it.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to an overlapping question from Fiona McKinnon. Fiona? Just down at the front. You're all sitting very near the microphones. This is handy.
My question was, how can the city realistically achieve the legacy of the city legacy and the legacy of the Commonwealth Games in a difficult Brexit market?
Okay, thank you. Stephen, has this got harder?
Interesting question. I guess, again, the Commonwealth Games has got a bit of longevity in terms of it's not just the short term, so Brexit hopefully will come out the other side of Brexit, whatever that looks like, in a shorter period than the Commonwealth Games legacy will. I think it's caused some short-term and some medium-term issues and wider investment and development in the city, and that stunted the benefit and legacy from the Commonwealth Games. There's no getting away from that. I don't have a solution to Brexit, unfortunately. I'd also love to have used it some time ago.
But looking out at the market this year, where there is a degree of uncertainty and the factors that are generating that uncertainty we'll come back to, but are things like, is long-term planning getting harder? Is regeneration getting harder, do you think, in this environment?
I don't think so. I think that's where the City Deal works. It's looking at the longer term and big infrastructure issues. For me, the issue is more about the shorter term delivery and how we get more spec office space, which the city clearly gladly needs, or urgently needs. And how we get the shorter-term development to work. That's a big issue for me.
Okay. And Claire, you worked on the Commonwealth Games Regeneration Master Plan. Is from a legacy point of view and from a regeneration point of view, has that delivered, or are there things that have become harder in the current environment?
To a certain extent, it has. I mean, I think that the Commonwealth Village as a housing development has been successful and has really helped lift that area, but it still feels like quite an isolated area of housing in a bit of a no man's land, and I think the development needs to continue within that area in the east end of Glasgow, where there's still huge gaps of no man's land where no one wants to live, and I think that needs addressed. So I think it's been a good start there, but there's a lot more to do in the east end.
Okay, and Richard, City Deal aside, does the regeneration agenda become harder to deliver in a more uncertain political and economic environment?
Well, I think the short answer is yes. You know, obviously availability of funding and delivering our key priorities is difficult. I think having City Deal at this time, City Deal investment, will help significantly, but we still want to see private sector investment. We haven't finished, going back to the question about Commonwealth Games legacy, that's an ongoing issue. And it depends what you mean by legacy, I suppose. I'm not quite sure, but if you look at the programme that the city ran in terms of its apprenticeship programme, we now have over 7,000 young people who have gone through that Glasgow Guarantee, which was specifically designed around the Commonwealth Games, and we've continued it. In terms of Dumbarnock, we have another We've just recently completed a deal with Link Housing Association for another 550 houses immediately adjacent to the Athletes Village, and we're hoping to see that moving towards site this year. And phase two of the Athletes Village will progress fairly soon. So there's actually a lot going on, I suppose, behind the scenes, but it's difficult to get that momentum, but I'm starting to see some of that momentum. But, you know, the uncertain political times absolutely makes investment more difficult, and the city, through its housing fund, is trying what it, and City Deal Fund, to trying to do what it can to get that kick-started and maintain the momentum.
Okay, thank you. And Paul, a question here. Brexit has happened and the world moves on. Trump won and the world moves on. Is uncertainty caused by the threat of IndyRef 2 worse than any possible outcome? We were getting into political uncertainty now, so let's deal with that.
Political uncertainty. I think, I mean, you've got to be realistic about it. There's uncertainty in the whole UK property market now. The majority of developers and property owners in the south of Britain and in England and other parts are concerned about how they're getting funding in because of the uncertainty in Brexit. So they're dealing with it, they understand it, and I think when you start to look globally at how funds are reacting to that, they're beginning to understand it and investment's moving on. When you look at that in the Scottish context, you've definitely got a further issue that we've got to appreciate and got to accept that independence referendum too does cause uncertainty, absolutely causes uncertainty. It affects pricing, it affects the attractiveness of the country to invest in. International, I mean, 70% of funding in Scotland currently comes from international sources for commercial property. That funding is very, very fluid and will go anywhere. I mean, it's if something just gets too difficult, then there's no connection to Scotland. It will go elsewhere in Europe or globally. So it definitely does cause a big concern, and we need to sell what we're doing differently as a country and try and show the benefits of that. It's a problem.
And at the heart of the question is the uncertainty worse than either of the outcomes? So better to have a referendum in 2017 in that sense.
I think, uncertainty causes makes the decision easier for funders and investors. I think once they know what they're dealing with, then it's a different type of decision they're making. It's whether they like the opportunity or not. So would I like an IndyRef 2 this year? No. Would I like it next year? No. But it's a case
most
of, I think,
of all, you'd like a commitment that it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen would be the key. But I think that, I mean, the absolute certainty at the moment is we've got to deal with Brexit and what comes out of that. And as a sort of country, never mind as a city, we've got to look at how we show we are competitive to investors and how we can keep ourselves attractive, but really begin to show what the benefits of investing in the country are. I don't think we really sell ourselves in a particularly joined up way for such a small country. You've got the divide of Glasgow and Edinburgh. It's 45 miles apart. There's got to be a bit more sort of joined up thinking there, and Aberdeen obviously and all the other major cities, but it's just to get that joined up thinking and get a clear picture for investors, potential investors.
Okay, Bruce?
I would come at this slightly differently insofar as, the investment world is definitely getting much more uncertain. But I think, you know, volatility in the property market is good because our view is it's the sort of mother of creation in terms of different views on the property market, the economic cycle. Is Trump good or bad? Is Nicola good or bad? Is Brexit hard or soft? Creates difference of opinions in terms of what things are worth. And as long as we have that difference of opinions, it means that property is going to trade back and forth. And what will be the worst thing for the property market is just almost, if we went back to 2 years ago, in my view, where literally there was nothing done because people were so worried about the future. I think that right now we've gone through IndyRef 1, we've gone through Brexit, nobody knows how that's going to turn out. But I get the impression that there are still definitely people out there wanting to do deals. You've got to be speaking to the right person. I think I would agree with Paul that the real worry going forward is the lack of finance in the market, particularly debt finance for development. And, you know, if Trump does start to spend his cash, and we see a rise in bond yields leading to a rise in interest rates through inflation, and the UK catches some of that, then that might make development finance even more difficult to source than it is at the moment.
Okay, thank you. And from an operational business point of view, Leah, are these things impacting?
They're not impacting us. We're really lucky in that we're an online business, so we're kind of born global, and you're kind of a little bit more, I guess you're just less at risk of the ebbs and flows. I would agree that uncertainty is difficult to operate in. When we were raising investment in the run-up to the Indie Ref, it did make things hard because people have questions about currency and that sort of thing. But what I would say is, as a startup and as a small business, we're kind of used to dealing with uncertainty, and you get used to that. And I think, you know, from a tech business point of view, it's much more of a worry operationally for me if Google decides to launch a competitor than it is, you know, anything politically that's happening. And I think cities and larger companies should think about that. It's kind of to go back to the Commonwealth and Commonwealth question and that sort of thing. As a small business, you have to look for your competitive advantage, and I would say Glasgow's got an amazing one at the moment because it has all of the infrastructure that the Commonwealth Games brought and all of the benefits there, and it's got the City Deal money sat there as well. So those two things for me, yeah, there's lots of uncertainty, but it gives Glasgow a really good edge in weathering that.
Okay, thank you. We've got a lot to get through, so let's move on, and let's move to a different topic. Chris Miller. Just in the centre there.
Hi, my question's really short. Is PRS the future?
Is PRS the future, Richard?
It's part of the future. It's not the only future, but it's part of the future. And I think I'm certainly encouraged seeing more people come to Glasgow talking about PRS. I don't think it was viable until the last few years, but it's certainly something we could do within the city, and we're actively encouraging PRS schemes, but it's only part of that. I think we need a whole broad range of tenure mixes across the city, from ownership to social rent, affordable housing, private landlords, and PRS.
And do you have any splits in mind of where Glasgow might be in 10 years' time?
No, I mean, I suppose what's interesting is the rise of private landlords. I mean, that's been a huge rise, probably not planned, more to do with the fact that people couldn't sell their houses during the recessionary period and therefore decided to rent them out because they weren't getting value. So we've seen a significant change in that. So we certainly have our housing plan to try and facilitate 25,000 new houses in the city over the next 10 years, with a significant proportion of that being PRS. But actually the split, I think, will be determined very much by the market and market returns, and probably also government policy, because I think if there is a move at a national level to bring in rent caps, that will have a big impact on PRS north of the border. So, you know, I think it's hard to plan ahead, but it is certainly part of the solution as I see it in Glasgow.
And are more SPF members looking at this, Paul?
I mean, there's a wall of money for PRS, but Scotland's only attracting 2% of that at the moment. So I think we need to, again, show that it's attractive to do it. I think PRS, I agree with Richard, that it is part of the solution for the future. But you speak again to a lot of these major investors, and they will still rather go to Manchester, Sheffield, Liverpool, all the main sort of southern sort of cities. And it's just, how do we unlock that? And I think it is making sure that policies don't come in that are out to deal with private landlords and that actually impact on an institutional investor coming in doing 500 units or whatever in a location. So I think we really need to be aware of that and have a look at how we can enable PRS more in the cities. I think it's very location specific.
And why do you think capital is going to those other cities and not Glasgow?
I think it's elements of policy, so the risk of rent control, the Tenancy Act as well, which again just make it slightly different from the rest of the UK, more risky from a landlord perspective. There are still viability issues. It's a relatively untested market up here, whereas in the other cities, the major cities in the south, there are more examples, more schemes. So I think it's just finding the right reason, making it a competitive solution for some of these major funds to invest in.
And Leah, from the point of view of your peers, your colleagues, is this what they're looking for? Rental accommodation by choice rather than for sale?
Yeah, I think there's a real mix, and I think it's difficult for younger people to get onto the property market. So yeah, there's definitely some challenges there, but I think a mix is what's needed, and I think that PRS has a place in that.
Okay, and Chris, yours was a very short question. Is there a short answer to it? Is PRS the future? Maybe. Part of. Okay, thank you. A question from Martin Brown.
Should the Scottish Government introduce permitted development rights north of the border to stimulate redevelopment and refurbishment to increase the overall residential stock?
Bruce, would this help? I think Stephen was already shaking his head. I'll come to you in a second.
Well, I think maybe it's part of the solution. I'm not sure that somewhere like Glasgow, where perhaps you've had a lot of the vacant office floors above shops or, you know, for example, up on Sauchie Hall Street, you've had a lot of the really sort of the big bulky office buildings that might have benefited from that have been turned to hotels under the BPRA legislation. So it's possibly quite hard to see where you could really make big dunts in the requirement for housing supply from, you know, the listed buildings and the sort of buildings that we have in the city centre. I have to say, from a personal point of view, that any way that we can take down the barriers to getting some of these redundant buildings back into living use, in my view, is a good thing. So, you know, if they were brought in and it meant that we got people back living in the city centre that aren't here at the moment, then I'd be all for it.
Stephen, you didn't look like you were poised to agree.
I don't think the planning issues on housing is the barrier for getting more housing, and I think you potentially get the housing in the wrong location. I think it's less control than needed.
Okay, Richard, is it something being considered?
Well, I suppose if it's brought in by government, then it will be being considered, and obviously there's a planning consultation document just issued, I think, the other day. So from a Glasgow point of view, we certainly want more people back living in the city centre, and we're actively promoting that in our new city development plan as well as a housing strategy. But, you know, I kind of take the view that sometimes with permitted development rights, you get the wrong thing in the wrong place. And, you know, if the planning system isn't working, then I'm happy for it to be challenged and for us to look at better ways we can improve it. But I think, you know, permitted development rights might just be a step too far in terms of not creating the right environment in the city centre, for instance.
Okay, thank you. I'll move on. Michael Smart.
Good evening. Does the panel agree that the application of rates on new commercial developments is a major deterrent to speculative development? And assuming the answer is yes, what changes would they make to the current system?
Okay. Business rates. Stephen, you're leaning forward again, ready to pounce.
I think it was in the Glasgow State of the Economy ask and request document where there was a request for a two-year moratorium on rates, because it's not an issue that necessarily can be directly delivered by the City Council, although we're always happy if they could turn a blind eye formally. But it's certainly a barrier. Is it the only barrier to spec? No, but if you look at our 177 scheme in Glasgow, the void rates for that in the first 3 years would be £7 million, and that's a lot of cash to come off a development appraisal and makes it significantly more risky. So not having that burden there to encourage development would make a significant difference. And if it's not built, there's no rates. So if it's built and there's a moratorium, there's no actual loss, would be our argument. And we took that up with the Scottish Government when we met Nicola a couple of months ago as part of the chamber discussion, but she deferred to the wider rates review that's ongoing just now in terms of Bartley review. So no real answers, sadly, Michael.
Okay, Paul, I'm sure you've brought it up too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an opportunity if we could get a vacant rate sort of period on new build Especially if you, I mean, the risks involved in speccing an office are huge. So anything, again, that makes that more compelling and competitive is going to help. So, yeah, I think something should be done that, that formalises that, whether it's 12 months, 24 months, whatever. It's all got to help put the overall picture.
Are you optimistic?
I think there's opportunity. And I think it's how we present it as an industry, as a package of different measures that, that help to stimulate the potential for investment. But I think Scottish Government have got to listen to that. They've got to look at what the impact of the actual... Well, they won't get any tax, Stephen says. There's nothing being built. So if you don't build it, you don't get the rates. So they've got to understand that. And I think they are beginning to understand that slowly but surely. So that's part of the role at SPF that we've now got to really sort of push that agenda and improve on it.
OK, there's a few questions on rates, actually. Catherine Bennett has one as well. Just towards the back.
Thank you. My question was, with the REACH revaluation coming up in April 2017, do you think that reduced occupational costs will create an opportunity for rental growth? And if so, in which sectors do you see there being most opportunity?
Bruce.
I would definitely agree that that is going to have an impact. I think the places you're going to find that most prevalent is that it will drive demand from tenants and occupiers to locations where previously there was a much higher rate burden. I think as a house and with an investment hat on, our view is that some of the secondary streets in Glasgow are going to see a real benefit from that. I'm talking about places like Sauchie Hall Street, Gordon Street, Argyll Street, where you've seen a very sizable reduction in the rateable value, and that is, in our view, going to create tenant demand, because overall occupational costs go down, and tenant demand is going to lead to more bidding between occupiers for the accommodation. So I think we have been actively tracking some of the secondary pitches in Glasgow because we thought that might happen. And whoever's got Empire House, for example, under offer on Sauchie Hall Street, I think is going to win a watch for exactly that reason.
Okay, and another one from Robert Colville.
Good evening. Does the panel consider that the government is likely to withdraw the rate support for smaller businesses in the future? And if so, how dire do they consider the outcome would be in the short and longer terms?
Okay, so this is direct support for smaller businesses. Leah, is this a bill that is of a size that concerns you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's likely to happen or not, but certainly I think the impact that the rate relief has on small businesses is massive in Glasgow. I came through the Entrepreneurial Spark programme, so I was lucky enough to benefit from free office space at Sir Willie Hawkey's offices down at City Refrigeration, and then moving out to kind of an office that's paid for and all of that sort of thing, it's a massive jump. So I think the rates relief in Glasgow for small businesses is second to none, and I think it's a real draw for small businesses to be located here. And I think if that investment is made at that level, that should hopefully then, you know, those businesses should grow and they should then become the people that are renting the Grade A office space that we're hoping is built. So I think it's a really important kind of starting point for the ecosystem.
And withdrawal would be economically damaging.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of economically damaging, there's a link. A question that did come through on Slido earlier. How will the first Scottish Government budget impact on the property market? Paul.
I mean, I think the budget was fairly neutral, I think, in terms of Scottish property market. I mean, the main issue really, I think, related to large business rates, which is obviously a bit of an issue. But I think generally, I mean, commercial property, LBTT remained the same. So I think as a budget, I don't think it's really going to impact on anything that's happening at the moment. I think there are other issues out with that that are going to be much more significant.
Okay, and there was a great quote here, actually, which I can't think of a way of making a link to, but I'm going to read it out anyway, which was Robert Choate speaking at a committee meeting with Derek Mackay yesterday, I think, the chairman of the Office of Budget Responsibility, who described economic forecasting as like a spot-the-ball competition where the judges change their minds repeatedly about where the ball is, occasionally years after the competition. So I'm sure we can all draw some parallels there. But Bruce, do you see the budget as having any greater impact negatively or positively across the broad property market?
So I apologise. I actually did sort of skim through this document, and it is really...
No need to apologise.
It's really boring.
You're amongst friends.
I asked it to search for property, and property was referred to, I think, three times in the 180 pages. So it wasn't very deep on property. I think what it did do was it obviously followed the Westminster government in terms of the slight attack on secondary homes for letting. And I suppose might that possibly have positive implications for PRS and PRS build to rent, etc., in the Scottish market? Possibly, you know, there was a lot in there on infrastructure. I mean, infrastructure was mentioned, I would say, about two or three times every page. So maybe following in the footsteps of the city deal, that if the Scottish government get its infrastructure expenditure in the right places and pull in the public, pull in the private expenditure and investment behind that, then it might potentially be a good thing. But it looked pretty property, in a specific term, looked pretty light.
Okay, property light. Okay, Richard, a Slido question. Is Glasgow Council and City Property short-sighted in holding on to non-core assets like a poor-performing media estate while selling premium assets?
I seem to get all the tough questions, don't I? No. I mean, they're two separate things. First of all, I mean, whilst City Property is an arm's-length council company, it's set up for a specific purpose. It has, you know, its investment property, and it requires to derive a rent from that. In terms of the assets it sells, are probably more council-owned assets, and you know, we have a duty to sell off our assets and raise capital receipts to fund our capital programme to deliver our aspirations of schools and other things. So I don't think so. I don't think we're short-sighted in it. But in the current financial climate surrounding local government, we have to take tough choices, and sometimes those are to sell off some of our premium assets and retain others.
Okay. And Claire, I'll send this your way. Why is Broomielaw not spinning fields? What can be done to improve it?
Broomielaw has always been a bit slow to keep developing westward. I mean, I think the landscaping infrastructure that's been done along the river is really good and really high quality, and it's a lovely place for people from the offices to come out on sunny days along the river there. So I think that has improved it a lot, and I think more of that could be done continuing westward to improve that public realm, because I think it really, really is helping that area.
Okay, so just more of the same, really.
Yes.
Extension.
Yep, it's a good start. Keep going.
Okay, thank you. And a couple of questions. One from Richard Blair here. How will the city deal help Glasgow and Scotland beat the Northern powerhouse when politics is so fragmented now? And a question that came in earlier was, with HS2 expected to impact extremely positively in the northern English cities, will Scottish cities like Glasgow be left behind or lose out? Paul, is that competitive set broadening?
I think it is. I mean, HS2 is going to be a massive deal for Manchester. If you look at investment into those two major cities, Manchester, Birmingham, over the sort of last 10 years as an average, it's about 900 million going into those cities. That's going to improve when you've got connectivity to London, or such good connectivity. Over a 10-year period, that's 3 billion lost to Glasgow and Edinburgh in terms of investment. So I think that can only widen, but I think the differences are there are, sort of, again, it's back to my point about sort of key infrastructure projects that are very, very visible to the outside world, and I think it's going to make a massive difference, but it is going to be something else that we have to find a sort of competing suggestion to deal with it.
Okay, and Leah, does this affect the war for talent as well? The people that you want to hire looking elsewhere too?
I think we're really lucky in Scotland, actually, from a technology point of view anyway. The war for talent we have some fantastic universities here in Scotland. It's producing, they're producing amazing developer talent, and actually the comparisons are there with Manchester. I would say, you know, looking at what's happened in Tech City and the boom there, I think if Scotland can harness our technical prowess, I think, you know, that's a real way that we can fight back against the Northern powerhouse. I think Glasgow's quite like Manchester, actually. I think, you know, Glasgow's got the same kind of swagger as Manchester does. There's the two big football teams, and, you know, there's a lot of comparisons there to be drawn, and I would love to see Glasgow becoming more of a kind of tech city that can really make the most of the boom that's happening in that industry.
Okay, thank you. We're up against the clock, so I do want to get the panel's view on a couple of issues looking out this year. And I'll take the first one from Karen Moody, please. Karen.
Evening. What do you consider will be the biggest winners and biggest losers in the property market in 2017?
So winners and losers, geographically, sectorally, however you want to pick it. And also, something else I'd like your view on, and we can do it in the same suite. What is the biggest risk this year facing the Scottish property market, or the economy, if we're talking from a business point of view? But Paul, I'll start with you.
I think the biggest risk remains development funding in terms of all sectors of property market. I think the biggest potential winners remain sort of residential property, PRS type related investment. I think the hardest one over the next 12 months is definitely going to be commercial office development, as we've got that level of uncertainty in convincing international investors and other investors, institutional investors to come to it. So I think that's the risk over the year, but I do think there are other opportunities in terms of major infrastructure investment. I think that's where the opportunity lies, and being able to set ourselves up for the future. So it's almost a case of 2017 will happen with the level of uncertainty we've got, but we've got to start thinking beyond the next 2 years and really start thinking bigger picture on it and longer term.
Okay, and Leah, for your business, where do you see risk and where do you see opportunity?
From our perspective, ourselves, opportunity is huge. We closed two of our biggest deals last year. One, headquartered in the States, a huge office centre network, and we closed a deal with a UK-based PLC just at the end of last year. So I think there's so much opportunity. I think from a technology point of view, the more we can get technology into both commercial real estate and into homes, you know, looking towards building the homes of tomorrow, today, and that sort of thing. I think there's so much opportunity out there. And I think the big risks are that we get sidelined by Brexit and the potential of indie refs. And looking at all of that negativity and or potential negativity, and we forget to look at the massive opportunities that are right there in front of us.
Okay, thank you. Bruce, winners, losers and risks.
So I would say the risks are general business and consumer confidence and a willingness to invest and consume, and people continuing to sit on savings because they're worried about what may be coming at us. I think winners are people who hold probably any sort of property within a 100-metre radius of our universities, who are going on an enormous spending spree to modernise our campuses and make them fit for the next 50 to 100 years. So I would definitely be buying property, any types of property within that sort of radius. And losers, I can't think of anybody going to lose, actually.
That's very optimistic.
I'm an agent.
Stephen.
I think losers are potentially occupiers over the next few years, office occupiers who are looking for new space. I think whilst we'll have a plethora of refurbishments, and that'll suit a large part of the market or some of the market, it won't suit them all. So I think occupiers looking for new space, large floor plates, will ultimately lose, and that's a real shame for the city and the developers that like to build them, funnily enough. And I think the risk is, it's linked to that, there's the spec funding. I think the general sentiment we're awfully gloom in Scotland, and maybe we need to be a bit more positive, because if that malaise continues, then it's a kind of continual downward spiral.
Okay, and what can be done to mitigate against that?
A lot of whiskey, probably. It's coming up to burns. I think it's trying to be positive. I think, as others have said, I think it's trying to keep our outlook positive. It's tough, but there will be opportunities there, and it's about trying to keep those focused. There are some good things happening.
Thank you. And Claire, where do you see opportunity and where do you see risk?
It was interesting what Bruce was saying about the universities. They do seem to be booming. A lot of money being spent on new buildings, both in Glasgow and Edinburgh. And of course, then they bring with it the need for student housing, which we can never understand why they keep on building student housing. If somebody can explain that, I'd be grateful. But that does seem to be continually growing at the moment.
Okay, thank you. And Richard?
I do think the risks of political uncertainty are affecting the market and are affecting how the banks take a view or funders take a view, and it would be nice to have a period of certainty so that people could invest. I do think we need to be more positive. I think we need to sell the city. I mean, you know, in terms of what we've achieved, we are, you know, for instance, the top five sporting cities in the world. We're the small, in terms of the best small city in the world. For sport, we've got an increasing tourist industry. You see more hotels in the city. More demand for residential, both in the city centre, changing lifestyles, PRS, for instance, more demand for that. So I think there's a lot of positive things going on. I think sometimes we look at the negatives and they sometimes are the things that we focus on. In saying that, I do agree that office accommodation in the city centre, we potentially will run out of that unless there's some spec investment in the city. So there's lots of good things and things that we have to work, but I generally think that we need to continue to work as a city. I mean, one of the great strengths of Glasgow has been the kind of a connection between public sector, universities and private sector, and I want to see that continue to see how we can rise to some of these challenges. So I think that's an opportunity, because in difficult times, when, you know, this kind of a triple helix, as it's referred to, comes together, sometimes we can solve some of those issues.
Okay, a good positive note to end on. We're out of time, I'm afraid. But thank you all for coming. Thank you for your questions. There'll be coverage of this in Estates Gazette next week, online, audio and words and images as well. The Question Time series continues throughout the year, so please do tell your friends and family. And while we haven't got whiskey, I'm afraid, Stephen, we have got wine next door. So do stay for a drink and we can talk ourselves into a more positive place. But please join me in thanking the panel. Thank you.